Hi there, and welcome back to the Connected Classroom. My name is Rusty May, and I'm joined today by Josh St. Louis, principal in Moorhead, Minnesota. And we're going to be talking about creating connection and community in the classroom this year and really trying to help our staff and our students feel safe depending on what the situation is going to be. To start today, I'm going to go back over real quickly, share the screen, and talk a little bit about what the show is about. And, you know, kind of what our goal here is, you know, we've seen the different outlines of some of the ideas. I was talking to Josh before the show started, talking about some of the different things that may be going to happen, whether it's, you know, completely online, completely in person, staggered start times, certain days of the week. So we have all kinds of ideas that are out there. Josh was saying the Minnesota governor would be explaining where he or she is at coming next week. So they'll have some more information about what they're going to be doing. But what we talk about here on this show and what we really want to focus on is the idea that, you know, we understand where the pressure is coming from in terms of what the White House and the Department of Education has been talking about the mental and, you know, the different effects that it's already having on children, the challenges associated with children who are distressed and who are coming from homes that may be not safe. They're getting the majority of their meals at school. They need additional help in order to access the information. And we completely understand that and understand where they're coming from, and also the absolute importance of getting the economy back on track and getting people back to work. So I think what's become more clear for me at this point is the realization that teachers have and educators and public education has become more important than ever before, and people are really starting to realize how important it is. This is what you see here now is an online petition that was talking about including educators in the conversation. And I've talked to several principals from around the country. Josh is from Minnesota. He'll talk today a little bit about what he's been hearing. But I kind of get the sense that teachers really haven't been a real big part of the conversation. And so our goal here is to get the teacher's voice heard, to get it out there, to understand what's going on with them and to empathize with the challenges that they're facing. And our mission statement is very, very specific. It's that the teachers and the educational staff need to feel safe and empowered to do their job. We understand the social emotional well-being of our students has got to be paramount this year, connection before content, and that we need community-wide engagement to discuss these issues, whether it's the Boys and Girls Club, after school programs, whatever it happens to be, to get the entire community involved in what's going on. Because, you know, we can sit there and talk about different kinds of things, but the reality is that we do need this component of our society moving forward in order for us to get back going. We could talk about some other ways to do that going forward, but I want to introduce Josh and thank him for being here with us today. Josh, thanks so much for joining us. You want to tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your journey to where we are today?
Sure, I would. Well, hi, everybody. I am Josh St. Louis. I'm up in Moorhead, Minnesota, which is northwestern Minnesota, right across the river from Fargo, North Dakota. I'm currently starting my sixth year as an elementary administrator, after having been a teacher at the elementary level for 12 years prior. So, and as far as where we're at with things, we're a district of about 7,200 kids, and we have four K-4 elementaries that are about 750 kids each. And we are a district that in the state of Minnesota, we start right after Labor Day with kids. And so we're, you know, still 6 weeks out from when school would start again, but that's kind of our background, I guess, a little bit. So I don't know, is there more you're thinking, Rusty, I should touch on right away? Or,
well, I'm just kind of wondering what the journey was like at the beginning for your teachers and so forth and your students. What did you notice? What worked? What didn't? Were you noticing the digital divide? What were some of the big challenges that your district was facing as we jumped into this in March?
Okay, yeah, it was a very intense time, like everybody else, right around that March 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th time, where as administrators, we were meeting for multiple hours a day trying to figure out what we were going to do, and finding out that, you know, by March 15th, we were going to be closed March 16th so we could figure things out and likely down for the next 2 weeks. And that's kind of what Minnesota did, was 2 weeks from March 16th through the 30th of districts closing down to plan for distance learning for at least the month of April and likely longer. And it was. And so during that 2 weeks, it was a very intense time because we had parents that were calling us, you know, concerned, wondering what was going to happen. But then a lot of staff too, like, how are we going to make this work? How can we switch from working on things online to working with families at home? And are they going to have the books that they need? Are they going to have the paper pencils that they need? Are they going to have the technology that they need? Are they going to have the food that they need? And worrying about all those things that were already concerns prior to COVID starting that then just became magnified afterwards. So a lot of, you know, regular conversations with staff on their questions and their concerns and ways that we could hear what they were wondering about and then try to provide some answers in sort of, you know, that compassionate, empathetic way, I guess.
And did you see a lot of people stepping up to the plate and really overcoming a lot of those challenges? And also an ancillary question, did you see kids who really benefited from the online part of it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, we worked really hard as a district to make sure that we were providing Chromebooks to all of our kids, grades 5 through 12. We already had our grades 5 through 8 already were kind of one-to-one throughout the year, but making sure that our high schoolers also had that. And then really working hard with our families at the K-4 level, surveying all of them. Do you have access to technology or not? Would your child have access to a device? And if not, let us know. So we could, about 200 of our 750 kids were able to find Chromebooks for, and some of them hotspots, so we could connect tech-wise with families. And we had some families that, again, we struggled making connections from September through March with those families. It was, you know, difficult to call parents or text parents or email parents that once this was their only lifeline, that the parents really stepped up. And we had a number of teachers that said, man, I'm having the best conversations I've had with my parents all year. And their kids are, you know, we're online with the kids for a half hour, an hour a day right now. And these kids are so super engaged and excited to see us that, that we did have some of those families, a lot of them that really stepped up during distance learning. And we had some that went the other way too, where it was like, yep, we think they're going to be fine. And all of a sudden it's like, we're not hearing from them. So it went both ways, I think, but we had more often than not more families and more staff that were able to really shine during that time better than we would have guessed given such the short time frame of 2 weeks to get things going. And then, you know, constantly working to improve it over the following 8 weeks, I guess.
And so now leading into this, we're coming into the new year. You said you're about 6 weeks away from the start of that. Have you been contacting your families? Have you been talking to your teachers? Have you been trying to figure out kind of what the concerns are, what they're thinking? What's the overall mood in your district in terms of where everybody is with what, and we still don't know what the outcome is going to be, but with what's going to come next?
Yeah, we've had some of those, things. As you mentioned already, our Governor Tim Walz and the state are going to be announcing next week kind of what our plan is for the fall to begin with. Previously, as a state, what we've heard is you have the options of full at school, full distance learning or hybrid model of both. And as districts, you should be ready for all three. And so as a district, we have been working as district leadership, trying to get plans together. And then as we think of things, connecting with staff. So for instance, we just met with our leadership team on Monday of this week, so 2 days ago, to start outlining some ideas. We're going to meet with them again next week to do that. At the same time, we are working, our school in particular, we regularly will communicate with families and kids during the summer. Anyway, just making quick 2-3-4 minute videos to say, hey, you know, guys, how's your summer going? Have you been reading? What kind of things have you been doing? Start thinking about these things as you get ready for the summer. And so just last week, we sent another video home to our families and our kids saying, we don't know what the fall looks like yet, but we're working on trying to get you here. We want you here. We miss seeing you online, or we miss seeing you at school in the spring when everybody was online. But for you to come back, we're going to try to think of safe ways to do it. So it could mean that you're wearing a mask. And so we demonstrated wearing a mask and what that might be like. We demonstrated for kids, again, that reminder of the 6 foot of social distancing, or regularly washing hands and sanitizing. And then trying to get them used to the idea that the fall might look different than what it has before, where we're used to being out at recess 150 kids at a time, or we're used to being in a cafeteria with 200 kids at a time, knowing that that's likely not what it's going to look like if we're back on site in the fall. So we have started with that. We still have more work to go, because we really need to be able to clearly communicate with our families to say, this is what we're looking like. Where do you stand as families? What questions do you still have? And so we're getting closer to providing more of the information. And hopefully next week we'll have some better answers as well, kind of as we toe that line between getting ourselves ready and then also working with the state and the government on what's going on statewide as well.
I read an interesting article recently that talked about the idea. Well, it didn't talk about the idea. It stated the fact that 18% of teachers in the United States are in the target range of the most vulnerable, and 27% of administrators. Now, that didn't even bring into, they didn't even mention the support staff, which I would think would raise those numbers significantly as well. What are you hearing from your staff? And it sounds like you're doing an excellent job of reaching out to your students, you're reaching out to your families and doing that. What's the conversation like with your staff who are in their late 50s, early 60s, who are sitting there biting their fingernails, wondering about the idea of going back into class, not only from the perspective of the health issue, but, you know, expecting a third grade boy to keep a mask on all day long, or that they're going to be able to talk through their mask, or, I mean, what kinds of those kinds of questions right now, especially on our show, are the things that I'm most concerned about, is what the educator is feeling like. I know Teddy and I have talked about this several times, about kids at his college coming back for face-to-face interactions and some of the concerns around testing and so forth. Are you talking to your staff on a regular basis, and what are they saying to you?
Yeah, it's a great point, and we haven't talked as much recently because we've been spending more of our time at the district level trying to figure out plans, but really trying to ramp up that in the next week and 2 weeks, where we're going to, during distance learning, once we started doing that, like I said, we were having regular staff meetings on a daily basis, and then we kind of phased those out towards the end of distance learning, but now starting to ramp those up again now in August. But like you mentioned, and I think our demographics would fit right in the percentages that you mentioned, whether it's that 10 to 15%, the 27%, and probably higher for some of that other support staff, that, again, they have those same questions and concerns about, you know, I work with a student who has high behavior needs. They struggle keeping appropriate distance and, you know, kind of that bubble space normally. Now I'm expected to still work with them, and I know that they have these great needs, and I want to be able to help and provide and support with them, you know, give them their opportunity to calm, have them, you know, walk around the building to find those breaks. But worrying at the same time, you know, I worry about some of the physical aggression that they exhibit regularly. And now that physical aggression will likely include pulling off their own mask, or pulling off my mask, or getting in close contact, or intentionally coughing on me because I'm struggling with things as a kid already at home as a second grader, third grader, fourth grader, and not being able to manage it. So our staff does have, I think, a lot of questions about that, like how will it handle, what will I do in this situation? Whether it's just the normal, like I have a kid who starts coughing in my class where normally I ignore that, but now do I need to send them right to the nurse at that point? Or I'm starting to feel some things. Do I just leave school at 8 o'clock in the morning? Do I leave school at 9 o'clock in the morning? And then if I do that, who's going to take care of my kids at that point? Because it's always that balance of, I'm concerned about my own safety and my own well-being, but I'm so compassionate and dedicated that I'm also concerned about the 18 kids that I'm working with on a daily basis, or things like that. And so do we have enough space to accommodate kids? Will I be able to work with them socially? But also, do you have ways to guarantee my own safety and my own health, my own well-being? Because I am in that that demographic that says I'm at a higher risk, or I live with someone who's at a higher risk, and so I worry about contracting something and bringing it home to them. And so really trying to listen to those needs and work with them and saying, here's the things that we're going to do to best support you and to best support your classroom. Is it enough, or what are we going to do if we can't do those types of things, I guess?
Because I'm hearing that, and you know, as a counselor, which is my background, one of the things that you mentioned earlier about the kids realizing immediately, they will realize that the linchpin is the mask, right? And so the linchpin, in terms of when a kid who is usually coming from a distressed environment is an excellent reader of human nature and can understand what the pressure points are very quickly, and they will be aware of how they can get a reaction and how they can do something like that. Whether it's, you know, I think about my own kids sneezing into their mask. If they sneeze into their mask, what happens at that point? Because, yep, you know, at that point, we've got a mask that's covered, if their kids are anything like mine, are covered with all who gosh knows what inside that mask. And then how do we deal with that situation? But we also have those kids who are going to be challenging. And so what it, two questions is number one, additional support staff. And then number two, if we have the ability to bring in substitutes, I cut my teeth in the state of California, and I know for a fact, we simply do not have enough substitute teachers on a regular basis to deal with any kind of a health situation. You know, are you hearing at the district level that there is going to be, I know the CARES Act and the different stuff that's been there, is there going to be enough money to do what we really need to do, which is probably have more people than we had last year?
Yeah, and I don't know about that. And those are the same concerns that we have, just because, again, even here we struggle with having enough qualified substitutes for either our teaching positions or our support positions in the first place, where we're used to saying, okay, we need to double up a Phi-Ed class today because we're short a substitute. And so whoever was going to be the Phi-Ed teacher is now going into a classroom for the day as the sub. And in our district specifically, we have a lot of former teachers that have loved subbing, like, yep, I've retired now, but I still want to be connected with, you know, the classroom, except for when I'm maybe going south to Arizona or Florida during some winter time with my family because I'm retired and I can do that. But those other months, I'm more than willing to help out. Well, again, as a retired teacher, I'm now 60, 65, 70. I'm in one of those higher risk categories that likely they won't be coming back. And so we worry about the same things. And I don't think we have those answers yet, that not only whether we have the money to be able to do that, do we have the people to be able to do that as well, knowing more people are reluctant to step into a school and in an area where there are young kids that are, you know, coughing on their mask, they're pulling down their mask, they're chewing on them, their fingers are in their mouths all the time. Like, I can tell you to sanitize your hands, but if I sanitize my hands and then right away it goes back in my mouth, I've kind of undone all that work right away. So I think it's a huge concern for our district, and I would imagine throughout the country, that this idea of we want our kids to be here and we want to provide that social opportunity and that emotional growth opportunity and the academic opportunities, but can we do it safely? And do we have enough people and resources to be able to make it work? I don't know, honestly.
Has it become a community-wide conversation in Moorhead yet? I know I'm constantly talking about ideas like the Boys and Girls Club and the YMCAs and different things like that, or social organizations where, you know, we're starting. Because the other side of the coin is that dad, you know, mom and dad have to go back to work. So part of the reality is that, you know, for a lot of the people that are, you know, in a community like yours, especially where you have a lot of people who are working, you know, outdoors and they're driving or they're doing different kinds of things, it, you know, telecommuting is not an option. This isn't Moorhead, Minnesota is not a place where all the jobs are very easily telecommuted, I would imagine. So we need the kids to be taken care of. And I think that's one of the things that we're noticing right now is the importance of the public education system from the perspective of the economy. And so are you hearing anything from the local community, or are people starting to try to come together and have some conversations around this?
Yeah, I know that there have been some of those conversations, and it's working with local daycares and preschool options and the colleges. I mean, we're blessed to be in an area that we have in the Fargo-Moorhead area. We have NDSU and Concordia College and Moorhead State University Mankato and Minnesota State Technical Community College. We have and Rasmussen College. We have five or six different colleges just in this area of 200,000 people, where we have a lot of colleges. We have a lot of people that are in the area working. But like you said, a lot of, while there are telecommuting jobs, we still have a lot of jobs that are not those things. And so we need a spot to have those kids. And so having our school district working with community leaders to say, what are the options we have to be able to support kids and families We have had those conversations. I don't know that we have anything nailed down at this point, but it's a huge piece of the puzzle. And I think that, you know, kind of gets back to, again, you know, one of our concerns our staff have is, again, are we just going to be a glorified daycare that holds 750 kids, or are we going to be an institution that teaches 750 kids? And balancing what we need to be able to do, which is get the kids here so families can work, but that we're not just here trying to keep kids occupied for 5 hours. We also want to be able to spend time working with our staff or working with our students and teaching them how to read and write and how to behave in social situations, but knowing that they also need that sort of same support at home as well.
Well, I know for a fact, because I've been working with you for a couple of years, and I was at your school last year. It was one of my last trips I took before all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
The social-emotional component was always a big deal for you guys to begin with. And in thinking about what the kids are dealing with now, especially the kids at the top of the pyramid, you know, the ones that we are concerned, the top 15% and so forth, who are coming to us with pre-existing conditions and so forth, but the overall general population as well, and the changes and the challenges that they're going to be facing. Are you really that concerned with content this year? Are you really that concerned with the educational part of this? I was reading an article the other day. I'd love to get your opinion on the concept of looping. And apparently the research has been done for years about schools that are able to do first and second grade have the same teacher, and second and third grade, and they call it looping. And so the idea was what if we just let everybody go back to their original grade? I guess kindergarten would get overwhelmed, but, and at least from that perspective, because I think one of the things that I've heard from teachers over and over and over again is, how am I going to create a relationship if this starts online? I mean, last year I had up until March to do all my social emotional stuff, all my connective stuff, and all the things that I normally do. How am I going to do that if we start this thing online in the fall with a group of 20 kids that I've seen in the hallway, but I've never really met before? So I'm wondering what the plan is with you guys in thinking about the social emotional part of this.
Yeah. You know, and those are, you touched on a couple of different things. Like I think the looping piece, I think there's been tons of great research over the years about the benefits of that. We've had, it's never been school wide or district wide, but we have had a couple of teachers that have done the looping where I'm going to do first and second grade with this group of kids. And I think it's something that as a building, we've talked about trying to get to a spot where we would do that, maybe kind of school-wide, where all of our first grader teachers are going to become second grader teachers the next year. So you get those 2 years with those kids. You're starting the ground running because you already have the relationship with the kid and the relationship with the families. And you're going to know what those kids and families need home and at school, and what those questions and concerns could be. So we haven't discussed that at all this year as a piece. And I think a lot of that has focused on really strongly feeling like we're going to be able to get kids in our schools to start the year. And so to where you originally started, are we concerned about content? We're always concerned about content, but we've always been that you have to have the relationship first. Like you said, you've worked with us for a couple of years. You know that that's relationships matter. We stress that with all of our staff, with all of our teachers, our support staff, with our district. With our families, that we need to care about you first, and you need to care about us, and you need to trust us, and we need to trust you too, and have that open dialogue and that relationship going. And so as a district and as a building, even more so this fall, of saying we're really focusing on getting to know our kids and our families right away, so I can start building those relationships as often as possible, so that if it comes down in 2 weeks where we're online, we've at least established something. But you're right. Last year we had the 6 months to get ready to say, yep, I know these kids, so I'm ready to work with this family and these kids, and I already know what my questions or concerns are with them. A lot of that is, as a school, we're already working with having our teachers have those conversations to say, okay, how did distance learning go with this family last year? What were the positives or the negatives or the growth areas or the things that you were worried about last year, so that at least our new teachers will say, yep, I have this new group of kids, and I know how they handled distance learning. And these were the things that they were really strong in at that time. And then these were those areas that the family, yep, parents lost their jobs, or parents were doing these types of things, or they were trying to balance this. And so be right away ready to have those conversations where we're starting to connect with parents. You know, like generally we've done a sort of a back to school open house where it's, yep, everybody has 2 hours to come in during the evening, and you get to meet your teacher and you see your locker and you do all those things. but due to, you know, social distancing guidelines and having people in the building, we wouldn't do that. But really saying now we have to be more specific and do like pre-conferences where you're spending 15 to 30 minutes with each family and the kid, whether it's in person or online, starting to have those conversations in August, so that when the first day of school comes, you can already say, I've already heard the concerns and the questions, or these are the things I need to be mindful of with these families, so that I can start meeting those kids at their need level, socially, emotionally, academically as well. So
I don't mean to kind of beat this point into the ground, but it's really sticking in my mind once I started reading about looping and so forth as to why there isn't a conversation about just starting over. I mean, everybody is saying that the academic fallout from this challenge is going to be significant. And so the idea of sending kids back to third grade, as opposed to sending them to fourth grade, they would start with work that they had already previously mastered. They would start with a teacher that they were already previously aware of. They would be in a situation where the distance learning component of this through the fall wouldn't be as significant, because of the fact that it's information that they've already heard. And they could go back and basically regain that. And the economic fallout of this, you know, I think, you know, those of us who are aware of what happened in 2008, it wasn't even until 2011 where we started to see the real significant economic fallout. And 2008 is a drop in the pond compared to this challenge that we're facing right now. But I really intellectually am wondering why that conversation isn't happening, where everybody just gets a do-over. How many kindergarten kids are we talking about who would be affected by a drawback like that, where we would basically say to kids, you know what, I think we need to take this. And maybe it doesn't apply to high school. Maybe it just applies to the K-8 environment. I don't know, but I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's interesting. So like our district, for example, we had 600 kindergartners in our district last year out of our 7,200 kids. So, and in our building specifically, we ran 7 sections of 24 kindergarten classes. And so we're preparing for those same types of numbers this year, 160, 170 kids of kindergarten in our building, and as a district, another 600 kids as well coming in. So from our, you know, just from my own district's benefit or for perspective, that 600 kids that would be saying, yep, we're doing that kindergarten piece again, and likely similar numbers, anywhere from 500 to 600 kids at each grade, K-8, the same way. I don't know how you would do that. Like you said, do you not have the new kindergartners come in? Well, it would seem likely that then if we were doing that, we're saying everybody's repeating the same grade. And maybe even repeating the same grade isn't the right way to state it, but I could definitely see that benefit of saying, like, if I told my kindergarten teachers today or my second grade teachers today, you're getting the same 24, 27 kids that you had last year, and you're going to continue going, I think the majority of them would say, I love it. I already know that kid. I know that family. I have that relationship with them, and I can hit the ground running. I know what they need for reading instruction or phonics or math. I know right where they're at, and I can, again, hit the ground running. Hi, Johnny, how are you doing today? Did you have a good summer? Let's get going. Remember, here's what we did. It's going to look a little different in our classroom this year, but we're able to get going. And so I don't have a good answer as to why there hasn't been more. And I'll be honest, I haven't heard too much about it, but it is definitely an interesting thing to consider, I think, just for all the obvious benefits of the relationships that you already have in the first place. And then being able to say, I know right where this kid is at academically as well. And so kind of hand in hand, I know the kid and the family better.
Well, I also see it from the perspective of you know, because the school system that we're dealing with is a creation of the Industrial Revolution, and really very little has changed since then. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of policy ideas and so forth, but the idea of social promotion by age and those kinds of things, where you realize that, you know, and even the idea that it's 9 months, you know, 6 hours a day for 9 months is how long it takes a kid to grasp a concept. But if we were really thinking about this as a way of changing education in the face of education, where we could send everybody back to the beginning, those kids who have excelled and who are ready to go could start moving into fourth grade, and we could start moving kids more appropriately and bringing kids in, and maybe the preschools just end up holding the six-year-olds for another year. And we do something at that level with kids from the colleges who are looking for opportunities to do, you know, things like that. But again, I think this conversation, that one of the things that really, really, I really struggle with, and I'm not, this is not a political statement by any stretch of the imagination, because I don't believe in very much of what's going on now from either side of the aisle. But what I find is that I don't see a lot of leadership. I see what's happening right now is everybody's just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And now we've got people trying to pass laws against any, and I'm sure districts and superintendents are concerned about liability, because if somebody does get sick, where is that going to come down? And so what I'm seeing, or what I'm hearing, and it's really frustrating for me, is the idea that there's just not anyone who really wants to step up and say, we need to do something, because this is a serious part of what we're dealing with. But I'm just not getting that. And I'm wondering if you're feeling the same way. I don't see anybody just getting out there and grabbing the horse by the reins and trying to get this thing going.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying about that, because, you know, I haven't felt that same way. I think whether you look nationally or across states or things like that, you know, I think within education circles, I think we've talked for a number of years that we know we can do better and we can do different, because again, we're not this society where we need to have these 3 months off in the summer because we're going back to go farm, or we're doing all these other things where we got to go work to help the family provide income. Not that there aren't families that are like that still, but a stronger majority, it's not that case. But this idea of focusing more on age groups versus this is what the kids' abilities are. And we know that we need to provide them new information and get them going, but we also have to take the time to get them learning versus, yep, we're passing you on and hopefully you're going to get something where now we're at a spot where we think only 50% or 40% of our kids are passing, you know, standardized reading tests or math tests, which again, what benefit are we doing at that point? Probably not much. And so, I think if there's any time that things could change, this would be the thing that would spur some of that change. And instead what we hear, you know, nationally, where it's, well, if you're not having kids back to school, we're taking away your funding, which doesn't say anything other than just, we want your kids there and we don't care what it looks like. We just need them out again, because we need parents to work. But to say, you know, well, this is the time to start reimagining what our schools are going to look like. Are we having longer days? Are we having longer school years? Are we rethinking education as it is? Or are we just going to, again, keep applying Band-Aids in different levels of need, hoping that in 2 years, school will be normal, which is back to what we did 2 years ago. So I haven't seen as much either. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one by saying you haven't seen much of that leadership piece of it. I think it is. And so I don't know. Maybe that falls on me as a principal. I'm supposed to be taking a larger role on that.
I don't think you can. I mean, in California, for example, what I read from the State Department of Education came down with this. They passed a bill that was called Do No Harm. And then the State Department of Education put out a 78-page report on the expectations of what schools had to do in order to bring kids back to face-to-face learning. And then they basically tied that with the whole the Do No Harm bill, which basically says that if somebody, you know, if a child dies because of COVID or a staff member, or whatever, that the school and the educators are not held liable if they have followed this entire 78-page document, which, as we all know, is just not something that's going to be, you know, this is a fearful environment of people looking for opportunities to try to avoid taking responsibility for this situation. And as a counselor and as someone who is involved in teachers and kids like yourself, this has nothing to do with you as a principal. You're being told what you can and what you can't do, and you'll be told by the governor. And then, of course, they'll say, well, it's kind of up to you, which, you know, then at that point, you know, you have other things that are going on. But I really wonder, and I've been hearing this more and more from that 18% of the teachers and 27% of the administrators, I think what's going to happen is you get 2 months into this thing, or maybe it's not this year, maybe it's at the end of this year, but you start putting this much additional responsibility on teachers to have to create lesson plans both for in-face learning and for online learning, the additional discipline responsibilities associated with dealing with the masking and the social distancing and the hand washing and so forth, the lack of the ability to create relationships based on the fact that you're constantly telling kids, don't do that, don't do that, don't stand there, don't do this, wash your hands, don't cover your mouth. The ability to create relationships is going to be affected by the overall thing. that you're just going to have teachers quitting. And then you're going to have a situation where everybody's going to have to go, oh, okay, well, we really do need to rethink this. Because I keep getting the impression that people think this is going to go back to normal. Like, it's just going to go back. We're going to get a vaccine and we're going to go back to normal. I don't know. I don't feel that way. Are you feeling like there could be some pressure on your staff in the next year or so in terms of just going, hey, this isn't what I signed up for?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've already been kind of trending that direction in the first place as working with kids has become more challenging, and not because kids themselves, but just everything has changed. And we talk more about, you know, the backgrounds that kids come from and the challenges that families are facing or our country is facing, or all these other pieces where staff are already more concerned about their physical well-being anyway, because we see more of those aggressive behaviors. We try to still figure out how it is that we can work with our families and with our kids to provide them the best thing, whether it's having, you know, a counselor on site or mental health professionals on site or social workers that are reaching out to families and already feeling like, man, what else can we do to support our kids and to support our families? Because more than anything, all we want to turn out kids that are going to be successful adults at some point, socially and emotionally, so that they can be, you know, healthy, productive members of a functioning society. And so as staff members, if I'm already concerned about that, and now I have this additional piece of worrying about, like you said, the lack of relationships, because I'm constantly telling my kids, wash your hands, keep your mask on, do all those other things. I'm not building the relationship, even that close contact where I'm used to. I mean, we're a school that, as administrators, assistant principal and I, we're out at the front door every day. High fives. Good morning. How's everybody doing today? Where there's no high fives right now. There's no fist bumps. There's none of that normal hugs to start the day. And our teachers do that same type of thing right away, where already we have kids that kind of need that physical connection that won't be getting that. So how are we able to handle that? So we're not able to build those stronger relationships. And then, like you said, now I'm worried that that what I'm doing is not enough for my kids, and I am getting burned out because the discipline that we've, or the way we've been able to build relationships with kids and be able to educate them socially and emotionally and academically, I can't do those things because I couldn't build a relationship on the front end. And now I'm having more of those other behavior discipline type concerns that I am going to burn out, because even if I have four less kids in my class than I did the previous year, I haven't built the relationship in that same way. And so I think there's a high probability of staff that are saying, yep, I just can't do it, where I'm close to retirement, so now I'm going to do it. Or I have these other things where I am concerned about my own safety, you know, physically, or I'm concerned about my safety just from health standpoint, that, again, now what do we do if I have two or three or four teachers that, who am I going to get to hire if I'm already short on subs in the first place? And now I'm trying to hire somebody in that's hopefully just graduating from college in December at this point, that I can get in and start taking over. And then what's that going to look like if they haven't had those experiences as well? So it's daunting and overwhelming, I would say, at the least.
Well, I'd like, you know, again, I would like, you know, I know that it started this show with the conversation of trying to figure out ways to get this kind of conversation started. And I appreciate you jumping in with me. I don't want to make this dark, but I do think that we are on the precipice of change, and that's what's really, really important. And I would, you know, and I know you're going to be a part of it, because I know that, like you said, this has always been a part of what you do and your staff does as well. But, you know, it really is a significant thing. And I know that you're doing everything you can to do that. Irene, you're there. You've been with us. Do you mind if I unmute you? You want to tell us a little bit about yourself? Are you an educator? We can't hear you. Let's see. I've got you unmuted, but it's not showing any sound. Yeah, it's not coming through. Maybe if you push your... No, can't hear it yet. Can you unplug it and just go straight? I don't know why it's not coming through.
I noticed that now she's muted again.
You're muted again. Maybe let me try and unmute you. Are you there? Yeah. Not working for some reason. I don't know why. Thank you for being with us. So if you want to put something in the chat box, if you have any questions, I'd love to hear from you. Teddy, any comments on today? What's going on with you?
Yeah, so thank you, Josh. I really loved what you said about just the whole restart in your school. I do have two questions for you. Sure. My first question is, do you have any concern about parents who may be against wearing face masks and may prohibit their kids from wearing face masks but want their kids back in school? And my second question is, how are you guys comfortable with the budget you guys have for this fiscal year academically, for the academic year as well?
Yeah, good questions on both. I was just having that conversation yesterday, the first one about masks with parents. And so, and I don't know what it's like where you're at, but I know one of the things that's been discussed, at least here in Minnesota, is this idea of, you know, whether it's distance learning or hybrid or whatever, all parents would have that option of saying, yep, I'm not comfortable sending my kid to school, so I'm going to do distance learning. And so that's one of the things as a school we need to, in a district, say, yep, we're not comfortable with that. And so then the next question gets back to, again, like you said, I don't want my kid to wear the mask, but I also don't want them to be at home. And I think, and not having those conversations yet, I think it's kind of almost a, yep, if you're here, you're having the mask and we want them here, but this is what we're doing to try to keep everybody safe, whether it's other kids or other staff members or anything else. And so we want your kid here, but we, you know, we're expecting to have that mask. And again, we don't know that that's for sure yet, but I think that's kind of the direction we're headed. And so then it's a matter of, you know, like for me personally, I had a parent say that I'm hoping that it would be a parent I already kind of know or have a relationship established with in the first place, so that then we can have a good conversation about why it is that they're not wanting a mask. Because I think we've had those conversations for years as administrators and teachers that if a parent has a question or a concern, the best thing you can do is have that kind of conversation with them. And so I'd want to know what that parent is saying, like, this is why I don't want it, so that then we can kind of talk through, oh, you're concerned about these types of things. Well, here's what we're going to do to try to alleviate those concerns. Or it sounds like those concerns are maybe too great. Maybe this, while you want the school here, maybe that distance piece is a better fit. And this is what we're going to do to support the distance learning piece. As far as budget, I think budget is always a concern. I think we feel okay with where we're at right now. I think it'll be interesting to see a year from now as we get going, just because at least in our state, we've kept our funding the same to this point. And so for our schools or our district specifically, with so much of our funding coming from the state and being tied to the number of students we have, if we're still continuing to have the same number of students, you know, 7,200 students in our district, whether it's distance learning or in person, theoretically our funding would stay the same. Now that then gets back to, does the state have the same funding or not, because of everything that has changed economically in the last 4 months and what it's going to look like in the next 12 months as well. So I think those are greater concerns. I know that there's plenty of districts though that already have those concerns as well already.
Rusty, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, go T.
All right, so my last question is, so I live in New York State, and Governor Cuomo recently passed a law saying if you travel to any of the states that have a high infection rate and you come back to the state of New York, you have to self-quarantine for 14 days. Has that been discussed with the governor of Minnesota? Should, in case an employee travel for a family matter, urgent matter, anything that relates to traveling and come back to work, would they be told to self-isolate or self-quarantine for 2 weeks?
Yeah, that is a great one. And I have heard that from your state. I haven't heard anything here in Minnesota, and I don't know if next week, if that'll be part of it. I know as a district, we haven't gone that far. Like in March right away, with the timing of everything, our school happened to be on spring break the week that everything kind of went down, that March 11th and March 12th. So we had a lot of staff that were traveling right then. And so for the 2 weeks when we came back last March and it was all planning, we had plenty of staff that had to self-isolate because they had just gone down to Florida for a week vacation or wherever it was, and we didn't know what to do. So we just said, yep, you're going to have to connect online, versus now if we're telling teachers that or families that. I haven't heard if those things would happen, but I think it's a very reasonable thing to kind of expect that idea of whether you're getting tested or you're isolating so that you're not, yep, you were out in New York the last 2 weeks or for a week, and so now you're coming back, you need to stay at your house so that you're not coming into the school. But as of right now, I haven't heard anything from the governor about that yet, but it'll be interesting to see what he says next week when he's on.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You know, the one thing that I've heard regarding the mask, too, and from a number of mask, non-mask enthusiasts in my home state of California, and I would think it would be an interesting conversation to have, is it's my God-given right not to wear a mask. And then if you've got someone saying it's my God-given right to not wear a mask, that's going to be a difficult conversation. Okay, well, then I don't really know how I can argue with that. But I tell you, man, I think, Teddy, you're exactly right, because I think this is more of an issue of personal freedom. And this issue is going to be get pushed into the schools, where parents are saying, I demand my right to public education and I demand my right to not wear a mask. Although the president did come out and say that all Americans were encouraged to wear a mask and that sort of thing. So maybe that'll change, but I can see some of that doing. I appreciate your comments, Irene. You're from South Africa, so thank you very much for joining us. And I do, you know, the concern of the teachers, as we had talked about earlier. My concern is the teachers, you were saying that they weren't feeling comfortable with their ability and their performance online. And that's something that I'm going to ask Josh that question really quickly. Teachers are such caring professionals to begin with. And when they, a couple of things are happening that I'm hearing is, number one, you're going into a child's home and you're actually seeing the environment in which they live, which can be heartbreaking for a number of teachers. Secondarily is that a lot of teachers are taking it personally when they're only getting 50% attendance, or they're only getting a certain amount of people that are showing up in there, and they're feeling bad about themselves and they take it personally and they're like, what can I do better? And that becomes a weight that's just unbearable for someone who's so caring and that. And are you hearing that from your staff? And I mean, what are you saying to them? I mean, my suggestion right now is to, you know, to stop with all that. If you think about graduation rates, if you think about all the people who are not making their reading levels and so forth, the fact that they're not showing up in class, they might show up physically in class, because if they don't, their parents will go to jail. But that doesn't mean that they're there mentally. So you're probably reaching the same number of kids that you were reaching online. I mean, in the classroom. But I mean, are you hearing that from your teachers as well, that this is just kind of, it's overwhelming to try to accomplish anything in this environment?
Yeah, I think it was. And it was more so last March, right when things started, because like you mentioned, our teachers want to be the best they can for our kids. And they always want school to be the best part of the day for all kids and families, to say, yep, I want you here. I'm going to take you in and I'm going to do everything I can. And I know that any sort of behavior I see or academic struggle I'm seeing, is that I have a way to try to work with that and help you, because I want you to be a successful kid and a successful person. And so, you know, right away as teachers, and again, it is heartbreaking to have to see some of those at-home situations. It is heartbreaking saying, I worried about this kid when I saw him for 6 hours every day, and now I'm seeing him at best a half an hour a day or a half hour every other day, or I'm not able to connect with them. What is going on at home? What can I do? So then they're taking it all on themselves. And so as principals, we're trying to say, yep, any of those questions or concerns you have, please reach out to us. Let us know what those questions and concerns are, so we can try to, you're going to feel better at least talking to us about it. And we're going to try to see what resources we can do, whether it's, we're going to make our own home visits, we're going to deploy a social worker or some other liaison to go out there and make some home visits. And that's just like some of the social aspects of it, or the in-home pieces of it. Not to mention this, I'm used to being the expert and providing all kinds of great knowledge. And now I'm not as comfortable with technology as some of my kids are. And so now I don't want to say I'm worried about not looking like an expert, but again, I'm used to being able to say, I know what to expect. And this is how I'm going to progress for reading with my kids, whether they're at the lowest level, the highest level, or anywhere in between. And then this is the advice I have for parents, versus now I'm trying to do all that online, and I'm trying to do a reading group or a social skills group or something else online in a shorter compressed time. And I'm looking at how I can manage kids in an environment where I'm trying to tell you now, turn on your muting your mic, or I'm doing all those other things that was challenging. I think our staff felt better by the end of May when we were wrapping up, that, yep, we did a lot of things better, and we have a better foundation for starting this year, so that if we were to go straight distance learning the middle of September, our staff already would have so many tools in their toolbox to say, I know places that I can start, and this is how I'm going to be able to start grouping some kids to do a small reading group, or this is how I'm going to work on doing my morning meeting and do some of that relationship building that I do with my kids. And then this is how I'm going to be able to reach out to try to connect to some of those families as well. So yeah, we felt those same things, but I think a lot of it comes back to, again, trying to really encourage our staff to have grace, and us having grace with them, them having grace with their parents, knowing that it was a unique time. And if families were struggling before this, just imagine how it is. Or even sharing. One of the things I did a lot this spring was say, you know, I feel like for my family personally, we feel like we're, you know, we're put together. We're two educated professionals, my wife and I. We're in a home loving environment with three kids, and distance learning is tough for us to do as we try to work our own jobs. And, you know, like for me, care about my 100 staff members and my 750 kids at school, while also caring for my three personal kids and trying to help make sure they get what they need. And the stress that I feel, recognizing that you guys are probably feeling those same things. And so, again, having those conversations with staff and encouraging them to have conversations with each other as well, I think were huge pieces to helping staff feel comfortable, for everything, I guess.
Well, you know, that's the other idea of being an expert. And you know, most of us who are in education know that the first 5 years in education in the in-person classroom is usually very difficult. And, you know, master teachers will talk about that and that growth mindset and so forth. But once you reach that kind of expert level where you got it going and you know what you can do and how you can affect kids and you can do that kind of stuff, and to have to replace that and to start it all over again can really be daunting, especially for people who are in somewhat of the twilight of their career. And we're seeing that again, you know, in the United States, that 18% number, but in other countries, and I don't know about South Africa, Irene, but in Portugal, where I am, because of 2008 and the downturn in the economy, they have over 65% of their teachers are over the age of 60. And they haven't had any turnover in that period of time. So people had good jobs and they just stayed with them. And so you're looking at an incredibly aged population of teachers. And you know, that comes with its own downside too, in terms of the technology awareness, in terms of the awareness. I mean, if you're 60 years old and you're interacting with a 6 year old, there could be some sense that you might have, you know, that you may not have a lot in common, you know, there, that you don't really remember what that was like and so forth. And, you know, I do feel like that this is an opportunity. And again, I go back to that idea of leadership, and what I hope we're able to do is create a conversation around making sure that people are thinking about this as, yeah, this is really challenging, but what an amazing opportunity to bring all this stuff home and to include all this new. I mean, I've heard as many teachers as I've had complaining about certain aspects, they all come back with, man, I had no idea what I could do with the Google Classroom, or I had no idea about this, or it's really, really important that. So a third of your staff is over the age of 60 right now in South Africa, and South Africa is getting hit crazy right now, I know, as well. But you know, there's so many positive things that are coming out of this if it's going to be allowed. And I know with an administrator like you, Josh, that your teachers have the opportunity to go out there and figure stuff out. I'm hoping that is kind of the way that it goes around the country as well. But, you know, that there's also that sense of, you know, that sense of expertise in those areas too, where we really have to get together and come up with, everybody working in the same direction, because it's got to be about the education of the kids and it's got to be about parents getting to work. It can't be one or the other. This is not this problem. It exists because these two things are necessary, and they're both a part of the economy and they're part of everything else. And you know, it needs to be fixed. I think it is an incredible opportunity, and I think your staff and your students are lucky to have you leading their school right now. Do you have any final comments to leave our recording with?
You know, I don't know that I do. I appreciate the time and the conversation with it. And I think it's going to be a unique, interesting fall, and excited to see what schools are able to do and what families are able to do throughout the country. And I guess across the world too, as you talk about, again, you being in Portugal right now, or Irene, you in South Africa, there's a lot of things going on. So I think the biggest thing is this is an opportunity to try to see what can we do, how can we work to improve the systems that we have right now and support our families and support our kids. it takes everybody. It takes a village, as we, you know, we often say it takes a village for any kid. This is no different right now, I would say.
I would think that that's the important part of it, is that we get back to the village, because there's too much has been put on schools. You know, you see the last 20, 25 years where schools have been burdened with so many of these kinds of things. And now, you know, the idea of a village getting together to do that is really important. So I know that those conversations will continue. Teddy, you got any final comments?
Like I said, thank you once again, Josh. I really appreciate your input, and I really hope that I can use that with myself and my students this fall as well.
Nice. Well, you're welcome. I appreciate it.
Odette, are you there? Do you want to join in the conversation? Do you have anything to share before we turn off? How about Lisa? Lisa, are you there? Hi.
I'm here, but I literally just got here. I'm in California, so I was in the wrong time zone.
Where in California?
I'm actually in Santa Barbara this morning.
Okay, right on. Yeah, so, I was in San Francisco for 25 years. That's where I started my career.
Oh, okay. I live in Northern California. I live near Sacramento.
Okay, how are things up there?
My little town's a hot spot. School's definitely going to be online. We're on the watch list. And so just from what I caught from you guys so far, just going to be part of that village.
All right. Well, the recording will be on the Learning Revolution if you want to watch the rest of it. Josh is amazing. So you'd enjoy hearing what
definitely.
He had to say.
Thank you, guys. I got the right time zone now, so I'll get the right. I'll be there.
Okay. Thank you. Odette, one more time before we go. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. And Josh, thank you so much for being with me. I look forward to staying in touch as we go through this thing and hearing what you guys are doing. And I know that you, as an administration and as a staff, are concerned first and foremost about the kids and will do everything you can for them. So thank you, everyone, for being with us today on the Connected Classroom. Remember, it's connection before content this year. We have to focus on the social emotional needs and the mental health issues of our families and our kids before we can do anything else. And that starts with putting on your own seatbelt first. So thank you for being with us today. Irene for being and Teddy for being with us live, and also for those of you that heard it on the recording. We'll be here next week, same place, same time. I look forward to talking with you then. Thank you for all you do for the kids in your care. You're amazing and you're touching the future. Have a great day.